Welcome to Ask an Innovator, where we interview senior executives about innovation. You can find us at askaninnovator.com or subscribe with your favorite podcast app. I'm your host, Josh Barker, CEO of City Innovation Labs. Well, welcome to Ask an Innovator. Thanks for joining us,
Ian. Thanks for having me.
So we're just here to talk about innovation and how ENG Works is really doing innovation. Can you just maybe provide a little bit of background for those that are listening?
Sure, absolutely. So ENG Works has been around for 30 years. We started as a CAD development company. We would go through and, actually in the very early days of AutoCAD, we're using that and a couple of other platforms. About 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we transformed what we were doing there and added engineering. And we also added, at that time, the addition of a new platform called Revit. It was very early on in this Revit infancy. What Revit allows us to do and the differences between Revit and AutoCAD is that Revit is an object-oriented database. What it allows us to do is actually build these buildings in a 3D virtual environment.
That's pretty cool.
It's really fun. And we can tie a lot of information into those models as well. Whereas AutoCAD in previous versions is essentially lines and arcs, and there's not a lot of data to it.
Right.
And I think we can all agree that data is the future of how we manage things. And we've actually begun, maybe about 5 years ago, we started diving into facilities management and asset management, as well as energy management, right? Mm. Because tying all these different systems together and utilizing the information that we have in these virtual environments from the design or the construction process has really shown a lot of value for our clients, which are ultimately building owners. We help these owners understand what building information modeling is, what the possibilities can be, and then we go through and we understand, well, what do you guys want to do with this information at the end of the day? And so then we create a plan and standards and even contracts that help them decipher, or rather help their vendors decipher exactly what they need to do to perform those actions. So that's one way we get engaged with owners.
And just for them, listeners too, building information modeling, maybe explain that for a second.
Sure. So building information modeling is about a 25-year-old theory. There's some debate on where it started and everything like that, so I'm not going to get into that. Mm-hmm. But what it essentially states is that with a building, the key point in there is the information, right? So we create dummy models all the time, you know, just a 3D representation. A lot of other platforms do that as well. If you think of Maya or 3D Max and things like this, it's a beautiful representation and you can really render it out nicely. But the key of what BIM brings to the table is that data repository as well. Hmm. So for instance, if we have a mechanical system and we've got some air handlers or an RTU or rooftop unit, we can actually calculate the airflow needed to go into and feed the building. So we're connecting all of this information together and gaining very valuable insights very quickly.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. So you're essentially, it's not only building, you know, they would build and have blueprints and all these things, but it would be analyzing, hey, what are the requirements to heat this building, to cool this building, all of that type of information.
Yeah, yeah. In the past couple of years, there's been some really interesting and exciting developments with the use of AI or machine learning and some certain decision trees going down the routes of kind of automating the design of certain systems, right? A machine is only as good as the inputs,
right?
And so we still have to be very careful and still really know what we're doing when we're telling these platforms, oh, okay, we need a certain size machine, or we have a certain heat impact. Maybe there's a piece of equipment in a room that's giving off a lot of heat. We need a lot of cooling to bring that temperature down. But we still have to check it, right?
Yep.
It's trust but verify.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things that we're doing for coordination is actually applying decision trees to identify the collisions before we even start to look at the file and then recommend different routes for those things. Another way that we're applying machine learning is in the energy management area of things, where we're aggregating sensor data, temperature and humidity and things like that, And what we're saying is, okay, look, we have certain set points, and if a temperature or humidity is out of whack, send an automatic response. But not only do that, what is the remedial action? What do we have to do? Do we have to turn on the air conditioning? Maybe there's a system failure, right? And it'll start to identify those root causes. So we're building in essentially root cause analysis as an automated function.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's got to be saving quite a bit of money, because normally that would be caught in the building process, I'm assuming, right?
Yes, and, or operations.
Or operations.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you know, there's a interesting metric out there. I believe it's something like 75 or 80 cents on the dollar is spent in operations of a building, where only a quarter of that dollar is used to design and construct that building.
Wow.
Right? So there's not a lot of dollars to design and construct, and so we're trying to optimize both the dollars that are spent, but also the time that's spent, because we always like to think that, that time is money, right?
Right.
And so if we can provide a building owner a faster turnaround on a design and construction project, they can open faster, they can start generating revenue much quicker.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. So what other innovations are you guys seeing and you guys are utilizing? Because AI is one of them, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, AI and ML has been really interesting in the past couple of years. But we're also pretty heavy into the visualization side of things, be that VR or virtual reality or augmented reality or even mixed reality. And so we have a couple of the different devices. You know, we have a Vive and a Oculus Rift. And we started with the Oculus actually when it was in the DK2 stage, the developer kit 2. And at that point, there really weren't any easy ways to get our three-dimensional models and information into those systems. So we had to essentially teach ourselves Unity and the Unreal platforms so that we could transport these models from our native software into these great experiences and really animate them and provide an interactive experience for our customers.
And now you're building games, right? No,
essentially, no, that's very much what it is, though. So that's been very exciting on the virtual reality front. I think there's a lot of valuable use cases for virtual reality in the AEC industry for architects and engineers during the design phase. But where virtual reality sort of falls flat is in the construction phase. It's tough to take out a very nice headset and set up kind of the sensors so that it can understand where you are in a construction site, right? So we've been diving into more of the augmented reality. So things like the HoloLens, or there's another platform we utilize too. It's called the HMT1 from RealWear. And that's more used on the industrial side of things, so heavy construction or rail construction. But what that allows us to do, and it's essentially a heads-up display that kind of sits in front of your eye, very similar to a F-15, F-14 fighter pilot. That's basically what they see. And we're able to link in different models and documents, and you can even video conference, very similar to what you can do on the HoloLens, but with a much lighter weight and a much cheaper solution, right?
Sure.
A lot of the heavy industrial workers are pretty tough on their tech.
And oh,
so
yeah.
These have been built to military specifications, and so you can pretty much drop it.
Bang
from
on
a,
them.
Yeah, and it's fine.
Huh. So maybe give some use cases of AR, some actual tangible, like there's some projects that you guys use AR, VR on?
There has, yeah. So for the virtual reality side, what we've done a lot of the times is provide essentially virtual charrettes. And what that means is we will create an experience and take it to a hospital so that the nurses and the doctors can actually put this headset on and feel or walk around a new hospital floor or a nurse station or an operating room before it's actually built. Or we're creating virtual mock-ups instead of actually building these true spaces out of cardboard so that the stakeholders can say, oh, yeah, I like this or I don't like this.
Right.
And we've gained tremendous insight out of that. Out of the augmented reality space, one of the best things that we're able to do there is take our virtual models and actually overlay that over a construction site. So they're geolocated, and we use these little targets to understand where the walls are. But the benefit of this is that we can see where the utilities are supposed to be in the wall or above the ceiling, right? So tradespeople are able to put these helmets on or
visualize
these headsets and see it immediately.
Wow.
And so we've caught it a couple of times where, you know, oh, maybe there's a conduit in a wall that's supposed to go over here on the left side of the wall, and they've actually put it over on the right side of the wall. And so that's been kind of interesting.
Wow.
We're using the same application for operators as well, right? Once we've turned over a building and they need to know where a shutoff switch is, they can put the HoloLens on and they're able to see exactly where the switch is and go directly to it, right? Because the use case that I've seen here is, let's say that the sprinkler system goes off and it's filling your office full of water. Well, you want to turn that off as fast as possible if there's no fire, right?
Oh, yeah.
But no one really knows all the time where those automatic shutoffs are. So with that, we can actually do some wayfinding right in there, some kind of blue dot wayfinding, and lead the operator directly to where that shutoff valve is.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, what I really like about that is I've always, you know, I'm on the digital side of things, like our company is, so we do a lot of software, apps, web. Well, that's so easy to tweak an MVP, but buildings are hard,
yes.
Right? I mean, so it's so cool to see what you're doing here because you're really allowing for MVP almost of like, hey, before we build anything, let's like give a VR experience and show what it could be like.
Yes.
And
we've
that's
actually,
awesome.
We've tried to take a lot of learning from the Valley and from web development and software development and apply that into our projects, actually. And that is one of the differentiators of us here at ENG Works from, I think, other service providers in this space, is that we try and look at a variety of different industries and learn from them. Heavy manufacturing is a key one of those. You know, if you think of how an airplane is built in you know, a variety of different locations, and then the different pieces and parts and assemblies are brought together and that final construction is made, right? I personally see the AEC industry going the exact same way, right? Not a lot of people are doing prefabrication now, right? Or building these things off-site.
So what for you, as you're thinking about all these innovations, what's capturing your mind right now? What are the problems and or the opportunities you guys are really focusing on?
Yeah, there's a lot of buzz around the owners and operators right now, and that's really capturing my attention. But I think you know, and to get on my soapbox here for a minute, I think a lot has been lost in the sustainability of buildings, right? It's always talked about during the design process, and you know, there's great things that have been implemented, like LEED, which is you know, a energy standard, and or not necessarily an energy standard, but a building construction standard to make a sustainable building, right?
Yep.
But I think a lot of that is lost when we get to the construction of the building, right? Because we only have a certain amount of budget to deal with.
Right.
And so I think there has to be better ways to bring those sustainable theories through to construction, but make them cost effective, right? Because a lot of those materials, sustainable materials, are sometimes more expensive than the traditional materials. So I think sustainability and kind of the altruism of building is a large thing that we'll see here shortly. It kind of ebbs and flows, just like everything in our industry. And the AEC industry is historically slow to adopt new processes and technology. And so we're trying, at least from our perspective, to push those technologies and those processes a bit faster into the industry, and doing things like this and having good conversations. You know, the potentials of machine learning and AI have really not even been realized in our in our industry. You know, there's certain industries with, like, airline booking, and not to go back to the airline industry, but, you know, a lot of those things are pretty automated now. And so we're moving at a snail's pace towards that. One of the best innovations that I've just seen recently has been with scheduling. our construction and design projects, where we can input all of the tasks, and we can actually connect these tasks to our virtual models and watch this model be built. Mm. And what the AI does in these platforms is it will say, okay, well, how much manpower, how much labor do you have available to construct this? And then it will tell you exactly how long it's going to take to build that building.
Wow.
Right? And it'll show you the critical path, and it'll run through hundreds of different iterations. I've recently seen some things they call generative design for the architectural side of things, which look very promising. So if you're laying out an office, for instance, and you want to optimize the amount of daylight that the people have, right, that your employees have, and you want to make a fluid open floor plate, what will happen is you can put in the design requirements, and then this AI will generate thousands of iterations in a matter of seconds, where, you know, previously you could generate those thousands of iterations, but it might take a month or so to do that. Yeah.
Wow.
And so you can key off of those valuable insights very quickly.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's awesome. So in your industry overall, where are you guys seeing the hit button spots that's like, oh man, we need to focus on this and get better at these areas, or we need to really hone in and become and add some innovation in these spaces?
Yeah. There's a couple of them. I would say one is the standardization of process, right? There's so many different technologies out there and so many different ways to execute different projects, right? Like you mentioned before, we're essentially working through MVP on every single project, and we're doing it over and over and over again. But if we could standardize that process, then we become much better, much faster, and more efficient to be able to turn those around. And not that we'll get away from the MVP type of methodology, but, you know, and that's one of the crazy things that we do here is we try different processes on every single project. And if it's not working, we just revert back to one that we know has
trend
worked.
True.
Yeah, exactly. But is still innovative, right? Hmm. That's our key there. And, you know, we try and empower our people here by providing them a lot of learning, a lot of training, whether that's, you know, where we go somewhere, we bring someone in to have a nice talk, or where it's kind of on the job. But because we have all these different divisions, we also allow our employees to transition between the divisions so that they're able to get that cross knowledge. So someone building a piece of content, a widget, you know, they may work on a mechanical system and then understand how that system fits together. And then when they go back to building widgets, they understand how that widget's going to interact in the system so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I think that is one thing, too, that has kind of been lost in recent years in our industry is the mentorship and the cross-learning, right? You know, you may have heard of people being the master builder or kind of the Renaissance person, right? And that's what we're trying to do here is empower our people and our owners, our
that's
clients,
great.
You know, with as much information, as much learning as we possibly can.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, you're touching on something that's close to my heart, which is really empowering people, and that's where you're just find floods of innovation.
Absolutely.
It's not one Steve Jobs type person, right, in an organization that's going to transform everything, and that's great. Now, speaking of process, do you guys have like a, hey, this is our innovation process? Because, you know, there's things like Lean Startup, there's Google Design Sprints, there's all these different things in innovation. Do you guys have your own way, or do you have an R&D team? How do you guys handle innovation?
We do have an R&D team, but like I mentioned, every project is very different. And so pretty much everyone in here, or everyone at ENG Works, does R&D in some way, shape, or form. No, we've implemented Lean Startup and Lean methodologies. We've also used Scrum and Agile type methodologies on our projects and also when we're developing our products. But it often is a blend of those different processes to find the best path forward or the critical path, if you will, in that case. And so there's no one set or documented way technically for us to innovate.
Yeah.
Some of the innovations that we have too come from some of the hackathons that we do, just internal hackathons.
Oh, nice.
And we'll provide a couple of topics. Like our most recent hackathon, we provided the topic of artificial intelligence and machine learning. And our teams, we divided our groups up into teams, and we got some very interesting solutions there. And that's actually where the one for collision detection came up.
Oh,
and,
interesting.
And so, they actually had done a couple of proof concepts right in that hackathon. And we didn't give them much time to do this, but what they came up with was very cool in a very short amount of time.
Oh, that's... What frequency do you guys do those hackathons?
We try to do them at least twice a year.
Okay.
Yeah, and split it up. So once in the summer, once in around Christmas.
Is it a big event? Is it like a week, or is it like a day, or a couple hours? Or?
So it's... I would like to dedicate more time to it, but unfortunately, some of our projects, it's tough
to step
away.
It's hard
away.
To balance, right? I mean,
yeah. So we usually give about 2 weeks worth of time, but that's also interspersed with our project work.
Sure.
Right? So we found that 2 weeks is kind of the optimal time to provide our teams to work together to come up with a good solution to present then. And we usually have, you know, a large presentation then, presentation day at the end. We'll bring lunch in, or we'll do it in the evening, and you know, bring some beverages in and things like that. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any like digital things, like apps and things that help you that you've built, custom built?
Yeah. So actually, right now we're working on an application to take a 2D drawing data from AutoCAD. And connect that into a web-based platform so that owners and operators can utilize that data to manage their space and assets. Mm. So that's one we're working through right now. But over the years, we've made a couple of different things. I mentioned some of the advancements that we did in virtual reality, you know, creating a couple of apps for Unity and things like that. We've kind of put those on the back burner, though, because there's some better solutions that have come up from that. But one of the other things that we've done is, it was about 10 years ago when we first started with Revit, this BIM platform, there were no avenues to distribute content, these little widgets out to everybody. And so what we did was we actually created a content management system that lived inside of Revit, inside of this design platform at the time. And so users were able to search and navigate through to find a specific size of a pump, for instance, and they could insert that pump directly into their project and be off to the races, not have to hunt through manufacturers' websites or things like that. So we were kind of a content aggregator, but a builder at the same time. So those are a couple of the applications that we've built or are working on now.
Well, to sum this Ask an Innovator up, We always ask, what is one takeaway you'd give the audience? So what is one takeaway?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as a main takeaway, you know, I think as an industry and as a culture, we always talk about being collaborative, right? Working with others and sharing ideas and things like that. And I really think that there can be more collaboration, right? And learning from each other, and really a cross-functional learning, right? Not just, you know, engineer to engineer, but, you know, maybe engineer to accountant, right? There's a lot of similarities between different industries and different work functions. And that's one of the things that we try and do as well is, and I mentioned that, you know, learning from different industries, but I think if we get a little bit more granular as well, would really be beneficial to everybody, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, being able to put yourself in the shoes of your customers, or
absolutely
put yourself in the shoes of even people in different departments, put the hat on, and
Most certainly. That's good.
Yeah. Well, that's a good takeaway. Appreciate your time, and this has been a successful Ask an Innovator.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks again. Thank you for listening to Ask an Innovator. Visit us on our website, www.askaninnovator.com. This podcast has been sponsored by City Innovation Labs.